Paul, I want to thank this church, especially your elders, for your willingness to help me on my last trip in August of last year. It's the second time that you've helped me on my preaching journeys to the Philippines, and I want you to know from the bottom of my heart that I am truly touched by your confidence in me in helping me in doing this work. I cannot do this type of work without the help of good brethren such as yourself. And I am more than happy to come down and let you know how the money you sent me and what I did while I was away. Before I begin this evening, I think it might be beneficial to you to tell you a little bit about me. My cousin stands back there, Kevin. He's my cousin. Love him a great deal. His mom and dad are very, very close to his mom and dad. And I grew up in Indiana. And I've been preaching the gospel for about 32 years. I started off, believe it or not, in a place that you would not imagine that I would start preaching the gospel, and that is Las Vegas, Nevada. That's where I began preaching. I preached there for 13 years after my commitment to the military was over. I spent over 20 years in the Air Force and retired from there in August of 1992 and began preaching in 1985, and have continued to that to this day. We spent 13 years in Las Vegas and moved to Beaver Creek, Ohio with the Norwood Church of Christ. I preached there for 13 years, and I moved to Harrodsburg in September of 2010. So I've been there. This is going on my eighth year, and I'll stay there until they run me out of there. But I'm grateful for every opportunity that God has blessed me with. Let me tell you a little bit about how I got into this work. I have a good friend who lives in Louisville, Kentucky, who has been after me. He tallied me for 2 years to try to get me to go over to the Philippines, and every time he'd ask, I was like Moses. I had a list of excuses why I couldn't go. Finally, I ran out of excuses, and so I agreed to go. And he told me, he said, once you go, I will never have to ask you or twist your arm to go again. He was right. My last trip, the one I'm going to talk about today, is my 10th. And Lord willing, I will make my 11th next year in 2019, if the Lord wills, and if our lives are preserved at that present moment of time. And I go because of the attitude and the hearts of the Filipino people. I want to share with you what we did during this 3-week trip. This trip began on August the 2nd and lasted until the end of August the 28th. The only part of this trip that I do not like is how to get there. To get there, it takes 24 hours, 19 in an airplane, and between layovers. We go from here, from Louisville, Kentucky, and we fly to Minnesota or to Atlanta. Here, we flew to Atlanta. And from Atlanta to Japan is a 13-hour and 12-minute flight. All you want to do is get to the ground and get your feet on soil again. And then after we have an hour and a half layover there, we get back on a plane and we travel to Manila, which is another 4.5 hours to get to Manila. And we landed there on August the 3rd on 2017. Now, during this trip, I was centered around 3 different places. We went to a place called Tagigaral, and then we will spend some time in a place called Angeles City. And the third place that we will spend time in is Manila. But the first class that we had was in the city of Tagigaral. Tagigaral is in the northern corner of the Philippines. The Philippines are an island, a number of islands, 7,500 to be exact. And there are 350 that are inhabited. And there are 4 major provinces in the Philippines, and I have preached in them all. And whenever we take a trip, we always center around one province because it gets very cumbersome to try to go from one end of the country to another. You know, you can't get on I-65. You can't just jump on an interstate or the Bluegrass Parkway. Anything you travel with in the Philippines takes time. because of the road system, because of the distance, and because of the water. Now, this is the plane that brought us from Manila to Tagigaraw, and this is the airport in Tagigaraw. Very modern, very luxurious, as you can see. It has one turnstile. You go in there and you get your baggage, and we get on our way. Now, these gentlemen here are the people who picked me up. This fella in the middle here, in the red shirt, in the middle, is Rhody Gumpat. He's one of my dearest friends on earth. I met Rhody through the email. When I was in Las Vegas, he used to email me and ask me for material. And so I corresponded with him for years before I ever personally met him. And on my first trip in 2002, the first place I went was his place in Tagigaraw. And I met him and his wife, Tessie, and they have become my friends to this day. They've been in my home, Rita and I's home. They've been in there twice, and would have been three times, but we were out of town when they were here in November. Now, the fellow to the right of the man in the front in the red shirt, that's Andy Alexander. He preaches in Bowling Green, Kentucky. He also runs the One Stone Bible store in Bowling Green, and he was my associate on this trip. Me and him are very good friends, and this is the first time I was able to work with Andy in this capacity, and it was a very pleasant trip. Now, the other three men that you see in this photo are the sons of Brother Rhody, and they're all preachers. Rhody has six sons. They're all preachers. One of his son-in-laws is also a preacher, and they preach all over the Philippines. And so it's a very active family in the work. This doesn't do it justice. This is outside my hotel room, but this is kind of in the midday, but by the end of the day and in the early morning, you can't see the road because it will be covered with tricycles, jeepneys, automobiles, bicycles. I can't tell you about the traffic in a minute. You have to experience it. I can't tell you. It's just something that you've never experienced. What I do, ladies and gentlemen, is I get in the back of the car, I close my eyes, and I pray. That's what I do because they've offered numerous occasions to let me drive. I have no desire to drive in the Philippines. This is another view from the hotel. This is the morning worship. Now, before we get to that, 97% of the Philippines are Roman Catholic. There are Catholic churches everywhere you go in the Philippines. In this particular Catholic church, there is a square. And in this square, you see these statues. Those are statues of the apostles. And they go all the way around the square. And everywhere you look in the Philippines, there is idolatry. And it's very rampant. And it's very noticeable. And the Catholic Church has two 24-hour TV stations and radio stations that go nonstop in this country. And so that is our greatest, those are the things that we deal with the most is Roman Catholicism. But we also deal with all other denominations. They have been there for some time. Now this is the morning worship in the church in Tagigaraw where Brother Rhody preaches. It has an attendance of about 115 people. There are about 40 children who are members of this particular and attended this particular church. And it is one of the churches that is organized. It has elders. There are two elders here. And Brother Rhody has preached there for over 21 years. This is the children in attendance. Those first three rows are all children. And the lady in the black, that is Sister Rhody. As Brother Rhody's wife, Tessie, and she teaches the children. She's an excellent Bible class teacher and a very great help to Rhody's work. Now, this is Brother Andy teaching in the Bible study hour. He did the Bible study hour, and I did the worship service. This is three people who were baptized at the end of our service on this particular Sunday. Three rendered obedience to the gospel. Now, one of the things that you may hear about Philippine trips is that we convert a lot of people. And whenever those numbers come out, the trip I took before this trip in 2015, we went to the most rural areas of the Philippines. During that four-week trip, we baptized 180 people during that 4 weeks. Now, one of the questions that I'm often asked is, do they remain faithful? And that's a good question. I would say, from my experience, I would say 90% stay faithful. We lose some back to the world, some fall away, but from my experience, I would say about 90% stay and continue to grow. Now, providence of God. Before we go, we send packages over so they would be there when we get there. We send class books that we're going to be using in the classes we teach. And so we sent them over 2 months ahead of time. It usually takes 6 weeks, but we sent them 8 weeks. We got there, and our classes start on Monday. And the books have not arrived yet. They started on Monday, and they have not arrived yet. So we were really thinking we were going to have to start these classes without the books. Sunday afternoon, after we got out of worship service, lo and behold, they delivered our 2 boxes of books. So we did not miss any time. They were there, and everything was intact. Now, this is some of the food that we read. And you see that white stuff in the middle? Rice. 3 times a day, every day, they eat rice. I do not eat it for breakfast. I tried one time. That's out. Not doing that again. But you learn to doctor it up. Rice is their staple food. Also, fruit, mango, pineapple, bananas. They got the best pineapple I've ever eaten, even better than Hawaii. Sweet, very small, but very good. And Sister Tessie, she has been entertaining American preachers for over 20 years. She knows what they like to eat. She knows how to cook. And we do very well when we are with Tessie. And we were with her 2 of the 3.5 weeks that we were there. Now, this is a church that I preached in the afternoon. It has about 50 people in it. Most of the churches in the Philippines are very, very plain. No air, no fans, no electricity. And it is very hot. It is very hot. The hottest part of the time in the Philippines is March, April, and May. 7 of my 10 trips have been in those months. And if I can help it, I will not take another trip in the months of March, April, and May. It is hot. It is humid. But let me tell you something, brethren. One of the things that I appreciate about the Filipino people, they don't look at the clock. They don't care how long you're there. They don't care how long you speak. And when you're done speaking, they're begging you to stay. No air, no fans, no padded seats, but they want to hear. And they'll stay as long as you will talk. And when you're done talking, they'll usually keep you there an hour asking you questions about what you talked about. And so that's one of the things I appreciate about the brethren in the Philippines, their eagerness to learn. When I went to this church this afternoon, and when I left, they cried because I cared enough to go. I'm the one who should have been crying. It was a privilege to go and hear, listen to people who want to hear the gospel, who want to hear about God's wonderful story of love. This is the church that Brother Andy went to. We split up that day. He went to this church. It's a little bigger than the one that I went to. It's a little bit more modern, but again, no fan, no air, but they are very, very willingness to listen to the gospel. Now, another question I'm often asked is the language. English is the second language in the Philippines. It's mandatory in their school system. 85% of the time we do not speak with translators because they understand English. That makes it a lot easier for us to convey to them and be able to cover more material. This is one of the roads in the Philippines. This is the church where we had the first class in Tagigaraw where Brother Rohde preaches. This is Brother Rohde addressing the class, first day of the class. What we did on this trip is we had three different sessions with preachers from all over the Philippines, and we studied the book of Acts. We studied it at three different locations, and over those three locations, we had 180 preachers who attended during that 3.5 week period. And we had them for 10 hours a day. We had them for 10 hours a day, and then Rohde grilled them for 3 hours at night. Let me tell you about what these men do in order to attend these classes. They travel, some 1 hour, some 2 hours, some 3 hours. They sleep at the building so they can be there the next morning. Brother Rohde, at one time, Brother Rohde's place was used for what we call PTP, and that's Preacher Training Program. For years, we did training programs where we brought 30 young men in, and we had them for a month, and we trained them and tried to edify and to bring them up to speed. Many of the young preachers in the Philippines come out of denominationalism. They have no grounding. They have no structure. And so we would bring them together for a 30-day period, and we would train them. Well, since Rohde did that there, he's probably one of the best places to do these kind of classes because they sleep on the floor. But let me tell you what they do. They sleep on the floor. They get up every morning at 4 o'clock in the morning in order that they can get their shower to get dressed. And every day before class, they spend 30 minutes in prayer. Every day of that class, they pray for 30 minutes every morning. And then we have them for 9 hours of classes during the day. And then at night, they study, and then Rohde tests them in the evening. Now, brethren, you've got to love the Lord to make those kind of sacrifices. Now, this is handing out the material. We used Brother Radu's book on the book of Acts and an outline that I had made, and we used that for our text material. This is handing out name tags, which are very important in the Philippines. Trying to learn some of these names are very difficult. We appreciate the name tags. This is me doing the introduction lesson to the book of Acts. Let me tell you something about that shirt you see me. What is the dress in the Philippines? In the Philippines, they have what they call a barong. And I was almost going to wear one tonight, but it's a little too cold. But the barong is their dress. It's like our white shirt. And you can get them in different colors. You notice that one is in blue. First trips I took to the Philippines, I wasn't as slim as I am now. I am a lot slimmer than I was. But I could never buy a shirt off the rack because Filipinos are little. And I'm not little, so I could never find one off the rack. So on this last trip, one of the young men that went with us, he wanted to go and get a barong because he didn't have one. So I took him to one of the stores. And I had been on a diet and exercise, and I had lost a pretty good amount of weight. And so I went in there, and I said, I'm going to see if I can find me a shirt off the rack. So I went in there, and they had a blue one, like Kentucky blue. And I put it on, and I don't care what they would have charged me, I would have paid it, because it fit. And I wore it, and it's my Kentucky shirt. And I wear it more than I do any other shirt to remind them where I'm from. This is one of the preachers that's standing with Andy. This is me teaching in the class. These are the students. In this first class, we have 50 young men who came beginning at age 14 all the way to age 65. Those are the age, that's the age bracket for the men that attended this particular class. This is the lunch for the students. In the culture of the Philippines, if you call people together to do anything, you are responsible to take care of their needs. That means feeding them. The ladies who do the cooking are Sister Tessie and the ladies of the church where she attends. They begin at 4 o'clock in the morning. And they work every day till 6 o'clock at night to feed these men three meals a day. This is the baptism on the third day of the class. We had two men asked to be baptized. This is singing before every session. Before every session we have singing, and the Filipinos lead us in the singing. This is graduation day. Let me tell you something about the Philippines. If you ever want to take stock in something that will give you great benefit, put it in cameras. You don't do anything in the Philippines where they do not take a picture. Nothing's done until the pictures are taken. Whether you're talking about a baptism, whether you're talking about a class, whether you're talking about a meeting, it is not complete until you take pictures. And whenever the classes are done, we spend a good hour and a half, 2 hours taking pictures. They want a picture of everything that they accomplish. Now, this is Mother Brother Mandy Pander. And he has what we call a tricycle. If you notice on his tricycle, there is a sidecar there. He wrote me a number of years ago and said that he preaches in three different places. And he had a bicycle. And he was using the bicycle in order to get from place to place on Sundays. He would start out about 4 o'clock in the morning. And he wouldn't get home till dark. So he wasn't seeing his family. So I asked one of the older preachers that was there, you know, that just doesn't seem right. You know, is there something I could do to help him? He says, well, you know, a motorcycle would be a real help to him. And so with me and with a couple other brethren, I bought him a real inexpensive motorcycle. When I gave it to him, he cried like a baby because he said, now I'll get home in the afternoon and I can spend time with my family. He called me, or he wrote me about a year ago and said that he had an opportunity to put a sidecar on his motorcycle so he could take his family with him. It was the best $500 I ever spent. You know, we take things for granted in this country. It doesn't mean anything to us. But to them, it means that they can have their family with them. And so he wanted me to take a picture of this sidecar that he had built. And Manny's a very good young preacher. He works in three different congregations and is very dedicated. This is the Sunday morning worship in Angeles City. I don't know if you know anything about the Philippines, but we used to have two bases in the Philippines, and they were here in Angeles City. It was Clark Air Force Base and Subic Bay in the Navy. Those bases are now closed, much to the regret of the Filipino people. They wish they were still open. But Angeles City is where Clark Air Force Base used to be. It was the largest Air Force Base outside of the United States. Now it is an airport, and they're making it an international airport. We stayed on that air base in one of the hotels on the air base. Brother Lodi Sanguian preaches in this church. He has been there for about 27 years. He's another fellow that I met through the email. He's a very good preacher, very dedicated, and we had the second series of classes in Angeles City. This is Sunday morning worship. There's a sign that's in their auditorium. Now, Brother Andy, when I was preaching in Angeles City, he traveled 35 miles, and he preached in another congregation, and this is a picture of the small congregation where Andy preached on Sunday morning. Andy was some of the men that attended our classes. This is the building where we have the classes. This is the outside of the building. This is the place of our second study. This is me doing some of the classes. PowerPoint has really aided our teaching here, because we can cover a lot more ground and we can make it, and they can follow it a lot better. And so PowerPoint has made it a lot better to cover more material in a shorter amount of time. Lunch. They rest for the afternoon session. It's amazing to me what Filipinos can sleep on. They can sleep on benches, they can sleep on concrete. They can sleep standing up. They don't complain. They're just glad and thankful. This is our song leader. His name is Jerry Morales. did an excellent job the whole week of leading us in singing. Now, this is question and answer period. During the question and answer period, you really find out whether or not they are getting what you're giving them. Let me give you a couple of the questions that we were asked. Brother Greer, can you explain the difference between the gifts of the Spirit and the gift of the Spirit? Now, that's a good question. Another question I was asked is, if a person wants to become a Christian and he has been in a denomination and he has been baptized in a denomination, does he need to be baptized in Christ? Or is his denominational baptism sufficient? That's a good question. These are the kind of questions that they ask. They ask about elders. They ask about the qualification of elders. When we were studying the book of Acts, they wanted to know about tongues. They asked, were tongues, why don't we have tongues today? Why aren't those gifts available today? And then we take them to 1 Corinthians 13 and we explain why they're not needed today. And so they're listening. You know they're absorbing what you're telling them because of the questions that they ask. They gave us, Filipino people are so appreciative of what you do. This is a certificate of thanks for me and Andy coming there and doing this class. These are some of the young women who are preachers' wives who came the last day of the class to meet us. This is a class outside taking the final picture. This is our driver to Manila. Going from Angeles City to Manila is a four-hour drive. We thought, well, this won't be bad because he has an air-conditioned van. Not today. His air conditioner broke. And so this was the hottest day that we had thus far. And we made this 4.5-hour drive in a van. It was uncomfortable to us, but he did an excellent job. And like I say, driving in the Philippines, especially in Manila, is an experience. Now, when you go to Manila, this is one side of the street. On this side of the street, there are shanties. There are shacks built out of cardboard. They're taking baths in the gutter. They're trying to get clean water out of the gutter of the rain that falls. And on the other side, you have modern hotels. It's amazing. You have such contrast. The poor and the more affluent. And you know why? Because there's no middle class in the Philippines. But it's beginning to change. I can see some ripples of change from the beginning of the time that I've been there. This is on the left side of the street. They have a place here called Old Smoky. It's a garbage dump. One of the things that just tears at my heartstrings are to watch children pilfering in a dump. Because it reminds me of my grandchildren. And it just breaks my heart when I see such poverty. Nothing that you've ever experienced will prepare you for the poverty that you see in this country. It's overwhelming. We don't know how blessed we really are, brethren. We really do not even have a comprehension of how blessed we are to live in this country. This is one of the side streets. This is my doctor. If I get sick in the Philippines, Dr. Teresa is our doctor. Her father's name was Ben Cruz. He preached in the Philippines for 50 years until the day that he died. His daughter is a doctor. She runs a free clinic for the poor people in Manila. And whenever we get sick or we have a medical problem, we call Teresa. We tell her what our symptoms are. She goes to the pharmacist, tells us what we need, gets it sent to our hotel, and we get better. 2 years ago, when I made a trip. I got the sickest I ever got in the Philippines. Somehow I got bad water. The only thing I could think about was I wish I had finished my will before I left. I've never been so sick. And I didn't know what to do. So I called Teresa. The man I was with, the brother I was with, called Teresa. She sent this medicine. I don't know what it was. It was the worst smelling stuff I ever smelt in my life. But after a day, I began to recoup. And I am so thankful she's there. She's helped us on a number of occasions when we've had medical issues that might have stopped our work and been able to get us back on our feet so we could finish our schedule. This is her clinic. You have any electricians here? How would you like to try to find the short in that? You could go all over Manila in the eastern part of the city, and you can find, this is nothing. This is easy compared to some of them. There's so many wires, I don't know how you would ever trace it to find out which ones. And all I can think about is a fire. But this is how they live. This is how they function. This is a taxi. It's a motorcycle with a sidecar. I have seen as many as 12 people on one. They also have a thing called the jeepney. The jeepney is a long military, kind of a military open van. And it's long, and it can fit maybe 50, 60 people on. They're all inside. They're sitting on top. They're hanging on the side. And I asked one of the drivers one time, I said, what happens if somebody falls off? He said, well, if they get injured, then you have to take care of their needs. But it's cheaper if they die because then you just have to bury them. I've never rode on the outside of a jeepney, and I'm never riding on the outside of a jeepney. This is the church where Brother Rohde preaches in two different congregations. He preaches in Tagigarao, and he started a new work in the Philippines, in Manila, with 12 people. The day that I preached here, we had 85. Church is growing, and it's the only one in that part of Manila. And so we held the third class at this place. This is their baptismal. That's the cover on top of the baptism that has water in it. And when you baptize somebody, you just have to stand on the outside and to baptize them. It's pretty convenient. This is Brother Andy preaching on Sunday morning in the Bible class, and this is me preaching in the morning worship. The only thing about Rohde's place is on the fourth floor, and they don't have elevators. So you got to trug up those four floors every day. We did that for 10 days, up and down those stairs. Stayed in good shape doing that. Now, in the afternoon, I went to a fellow whose brother named Jimmy Batang. He's a retired policeman. We converted him about 8 years ago. And over a period of time, he's converted his garage into a meeting place so brethren can get together because he lives in a very affluent neighborhood. And so we have about 25 people that meet there. This is, I think, the third time that I preached there. These are the picture of the group after the service was over. This is the third and final study that began on the last full week that we were there. This is handing out the books. This is me doing some teaching. Brother Andy teaching a class. These are the students. These are the ladies that took care of us for the whole week we were there. They slept in that kitchen every night so they could be there for breakfast in the morning. These are some of the students. This is a class picture at the end of the class. We had 50 graduates from this particular class. While we were there, Brother Ron Halbrook, who is the one that introduced me to this work. He happened to be over there when I was there, and we went over to Manila to see him the last night that we were in the Philippines. Brother Halbrook is over in the Philippines right now. He's making his 69th trip. He should get dual citizenship. I don't want to be that involved. Brother Halbrook is in a congregation of a dual preacher situation. They encourage him to go. Brother Ron does four trips every year to go to the Philippines. And nobody knows the work probably as well as Brother Ron does. I will always be grateful to Ron that he introduced me to this work. I'll be forever grateful that he tried to get me to go and got me to go. You know, I love going to the Philippines, but at the end of the trip, it's bittersweet. I hate to say goodbye. It's not one of the things that I do very well. And I've grown to love these people so much that it hurts me every time I leave, because I never know if I'll get back, or even if I do, if they will be there, because the mortality rate is so low in this country. And so whenever I leave, but you know what's amazing? They cry too. They are so appreciative of anything that you do for them. Anything that you do, they look at it as love that you express for them. And they are so thankful that, and we tell these people at every time we go that we could not make it and we could not do these trips if it wasn't for people like you. I could not do this. And any good that these trips do, first and foremost, is to the glory of God. And the second are for all the people who helped make it possible that I can take this trip. I could not do this work without you, and I want you to know that I appreciate it more than I could ever express, your willingness to help me to do this type of work. Let me do a couple things before I close. In the Philippines, we have in the last few years, we have changed our focus. And what we are trying to do is to edify and to build up the preachers. They are so unknowledgeable on basic things. And so what we have begun to do is what we did in this trip. We have begun to take a book of the Bible, and we've dedicated a whole week to sit down and to go with them through that book in a way that they would never be able to do it on their own. And what we do is we try to give them a better understanding of the scriptures to help them teach those that they come in contact with. Because they're going to have to be able to show the premillennialist why premillennialism is wrong. They're going to have to be able to show people why Mormonism is contrary to the Word of God. They're going to be able to have to answer the Jehovah Witness that come to their country and tell them that there's going to be a 1,000-year reign on earth and there's no such thing as physical death. They're going to be able to have to explain to people why Roman Catholicism is not the church of the Bible, and why Peter was not the first pope, and why the church was not built on Peter, but it was built on the confession of Peter, and that he is the Son of God. They need to know how to answer these questions. And brethren, one of the things I have dedicated my life to in this trip is I want to wear myself out that they do not need me anymore. These men have to do the work. This is their country. They need to learn how to stand on their own. And me and many of the men that are going over there now, we are trying to use the door that is open at this time to try to ground them and to edify them and to build them up so they can go out and teach each other and they can teach other people, and they do not need us as much as they have in the past. We are striving to make that happen. But for now, we have an open door. We have an open door. Let me tell you about a couple of things. I've done things in the Philippines that I will never do in this country. 2 years ago, I was asked to preach in a Christian church in December with all the instruments on the stage and a Christmas tree in the corner. You know what I preached on? Instrumental music. They didn't throw me out. Didn't get mad and walked out. But you know what happened? The next week, the instruments came out. They took them out. They figured it out. They figured it out. They don't get angry. They don't get mad. I've been in churches. We have standing invitations to go into denominational churches and preach about premillennialism, something that that church preaches, and they want to hear what we have to say. Could you see me doing that in a Jehovah's Witness church? Could you see Jacob being asked to go into the Jehovah's Witness and preach what the Bible says about premillennialism? But we get those kind of opportunities. And you know what? We convert a lot of their preachers. Let me tell you one story in closing. I guess it was my second trip. I went there and we had a four-day seminar. And the first day, Brother Ron was teaching, and at the end of every session, we have a question and answer period. Well, there was this older gentleman there. He's about 78, I think, at the time. And he was a Baptist preacher. And he had been preaching in the Philippines for 50 years. And that first day, when we opened up the floor, he just came with both barrels at Ron. Ron just patiently took him through the scriptures and answered every question that he asked him. We're walking back to the hotel that night about 10 o'clock after 12 hours. We're walking back to the hotel. I'm saying, man, that guy was mad. He's not going to be back tomorrow. Ron says, he'll be right there in that seat tomorrow. Sure enough, next day, he was there. That day, I had the question. He had them. He was a little fiery, but he wasn't like the day before. But he still had questions. I just opened the Bible, answered his questions, had him read the passages, asked him if he understood. And he came back the third day. And the third day, he had a couple questions. The fourth day, he didn't ask any. So at the end of the fourth class, we had an invitation. We had 35 people come forward to be baptized. And among them was that 78-year-old Baptist preacher. He came up to me and he said, Mr. Greer, I'd like to address the audience. Well, this is kind of new to me. I didn't know whether I should let him do that or things could get out of hand. Ron says, no, let him say what he wants. We can answer him. Let him say it. Let him speak. He said, I want you folks to know what happened to me this week. He said, one of my friends invited me to this seminar, and I'd heard about the Church of Christ, and I came here with the intent of showing them that they were wrong. And every night after the classes, I went home and opened my Bible and tried to prove they were wrong in what they said. And I stayed up till dawn every day trying to find a hole in what they taught. And finally this morning, I couldn't find a hole. And I had to admit that I'm wrong. And I've been wrong. And I've been misleading people. And I've not been telling them the truth. And what I want you to do for me, I want you to pray for me, that God will let me live long enough to be able to try to undo some of the harm that I've done in misguiding people and misteaching them. And I want you to baptize me for the remission of my sin so I know that I'm in the Lord's church. We baptized him at midnight. There wasn't a dry eye in the place. 2 years later, I went back. He converted 75% of the Baptist congregation that he preached for. There is no longer a Baptist church there. It is the Lord's church in that place. He gave back the money that the Baptist church was giving him in the States because he couldn't take it any longer because they didn't teach the truth. Now, brethren, we're not giving money up in the Philippines. That is a big, big deal. We did not promise him 1 cent. to replace it. I have never seen that in my country. Never. You want to know why I go back? That's why I go, and if the Lord lets me live and this world continues, I'll go again. There's people, the Bible says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. There are men and women there who are hungering for the truth. You know what my prayer is? That may happen again in my country. You know, I read the restoration history, and I think, what a time to live in. What a time to be a Christian during the restoration period, where people wanted to know the truth, when people were willing to know. Can you imagine having a meeting for 3 weeks and have to extend it for 2 more weeks because of the people who are attending? Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to have a meeting where you filled every pew in this building and did it every night with people in the community who wanted to hear what God said? You know what I found out? What I always knew. Nothing's wrong with this. This is not the problem in our country. It's the lack of knowledge in this that's causing our problem in this country. The difference in the Philippines and in the United States is the heart of the hearer. The heart of the hearer who wants the truth will accept the truth. The person who will reject it, you cannot help them. But you know what? I haven't given up on my country. I continue to pray. I continue to teach. I continue to go through any door that they open for me. In Harrisburg, I'm on the radio. I'm on the TV. I take every opportunity in any way I can to spread the gospel, and I know God will give the increase. But in the Philippines, you don't have to beg them. You don't have to scratch all over the world to find them. They come to you because they're hungering and thirsting after righteousness. The gospel of Jesus Christ is the answer for everyone in any place at any time. If you're here tonight and you're not a child of God, the only hope for you is Jesus Christ. He is the only way, according to his own words. In John 14, verse 6, Jesus said, I am the truth, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh to me, cometh to the Father except through me. If you want to get to the Father, you're going to have to go through the Son. And you need to have a relationship with the Son. One of the things I tell people on my radio program, I don't want your money. We don't want anything from you. We want you to come with an open Bible, an open mind, and we want to show you your need for God in your life and why you need to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And the reason you need to have it is because that's the only way you're going to get to heaven. You're going to have to be in his church. You're going to have to be one of his children. You're going to have to be in the family of God. And you're going to have to desire. Nobody's going to get to heaven by accident. You're going to get there because that's where you want to be. And I believe that's where you want to be, or you wouldn't be here tonight. But I want to encourage you that the devil's going to do everything he can to discourage you, to give up your faith, to not be faithful, to not be committed, to not be dedicated. Because when he does that, he wins. You know, son, ladies and gentlemen, we who are members of the body of Christ, the devil doesn't want us to become evil people, murderers, whoremongers, immoral people. That's not what the devil wants. What the devil wants is to get you busy in anything but spiritual things. Just get you busy in life. You're not doing any sin. You're not doing anything as simple, but you're just too busy to dedicate your thing to spiritual things. That way, the devil wins. Because you can't influence anybody else to live for God. And in time, you'll weaken, you'll be vulnerable, and he'll get you too. He's a master, folks. He knows exactly what he's doing. In the church that I preach at, we have a few ladies who are married to men who are not believers. You know, I got them together when I first went to Harrisburg, and I told them this. If you ever hope to convert them, you've got to be dedicated. You've got to be committed. You've got to show them that God and His relationship with His Son and your life as a Christian is an important thing in your life, and that is the only way you're going to win them over. I have never seen an unbeliever won over by a spouse who is a believer that is not fully committed to serving God. Let me tell you something, brethren. If it's not important to us, it's not going to be important to the sinner. Why should it be? If we don't see the need to be faithful and serve God, how are we going to convince the sinner that he needs to be? If you're subject to the Lord's invitation, we bid you to come forward as together we stand and sing.